The question is whether or not we as a Senate and we as a government are going to pay for what we spend. If we can't find $10 billion to pay for something that all 100 senators support, we're in deep trouble.
Jim Bunning, who once pitched a no-hitter against the Mets, has now been shut out by his own party in the Senate. The Kentucky Republican had his one-man filibuster defeated last night, allowing unemployment payments to be extended to the long-term jobless, allowing federal transportation workers to be unfurloughed and highway spending to resume, and more. But maybe Bunning made his point about paying for things. NPR's Mara Liasson is here to talk about Bunning and the four new Republican ideas President Obama is incorporating into his health care bill, and maybe more. Hi, Mara. Thanks so much for doing this. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks for having me.
I guess I'm not supposed to have any sympathy for Jim Bunning because nobody else does, but I actually think he made a useful point. Everyone supports extending unemployment benefits for the long-term jobless, Bunning included, but the government will borrow to pay for it. Just after the Democrats made a big show of restoring the pay-as-you-go principle that the old Republican Congress had abandoned, that's actually a fair point, isn't it?
It's a fair point, and the politics of this incident were really double-edged because, on the one hand, it did shine a spotlight on Bunning's argument. Bunning himself is very unpopular, even with his own party. They prevailed upon him not to run for re-election this year. He's cantankerous. He's ornery. He's never played well with the other children. But his point, which is this is only $10 billion, we can't even find $10 billion, we have to borrow $10 billion, was a point that a lot of people agree with, and I don't think that having that point aired hurt him or the Republicans at all. Now, on the other hand, the Democrats thought that they had a winner here because, once again, shades of 1995 and the government shutdown engineered by Newt Gingrich back then, here were Republicans, or a Republican, standing in the way of something very popular: highway funding, 2,000 people had to be furloughed, and unemployment benefits. And they were being obstructionist. They were using this Byzantine tool, the filibuster, which plays into the argument over health care. So they felt that they had a good political kind of cudgel here to beat the Republicans over the head with, which they did for a couple of days. And then the plug was pulled, Bunning stepped down, and the money is flowing again. And the money, which is being borrowed, is flowing again.
Yeah. And therefore, the hypocrisy shoe fits both feet, it seems to me. Because, yes, the Democrats, as we said, tout paying for what you pass, but then borrow more instead. But the Republicans, who are trying to position themselves as the bigger deficit hawks now, failed to support Bunning's filibuster. Why did they abandon one of their own on this matter of fiscal discipline?
Because they didn't want to be responsible for furloughing transportation workers or holding up unemployment benefits. This is just another one of the kind of Washington is broken stories. I mean, why can't the two parties get together on some kind of a deficit reduction plan? Instead, we're just going to have some incidents like this over and over again.
Healthcare. The saga continues today with President Obama speaking publicly this afternoon and incorporating four central Republican ideas into his bill. And I want to linger on this for a minute and say they are medical savings accounts, the high deductible plans that the Republicans favor. They'll be included as an option in the new insurance exchanges, if I understand it correctly. He'll empower states to experiment with medical malpractice reform, increase payments to doctors under Medicaid, and to have health care workers pose as patients in medical fraud sting operations. I'd like to do an undercover ride-along on one of those. Mara, does any of this outreach matter?
You mean in terms of will it get Republican votes? No. It might matter to the public who sees the president being a man of his word. I reached out. I had a 7.5-hour meeting with Republicans at Blair House last week. I asked them for their ideas. They gave me some ideas, and I took four good ones. I quibble a little bit with calling them central ideas. These aren't the central ideas of the Republicans. The Republicans'
central idea is to
not pass comprehensive health care, and to not to mandate insurance. But yes, these are Republican ideas. Some of them, in one form or another, were already in his bill, like the medical malpractice demonstration projects. But he is going to incorporate these. And Republicans, of course, say they're just cosmetic, because what they want is for him to scrap his bill. But he is moving forward. Today is the official beginning of the end game of health care. When the president at 1:45 announces that he wants Congress to move swiftly and finish this bill.
When I say central, I think that we saw an attempt at health care legislation during the Bush administration built around medical savings accounts, without going into the pros and cons of medical savings accounts in too much detail. I think they tried to build around that and around tort reform. So those were the central ideas of what to do rather than what not to do.
Yes. That's definitely fair. You know, their idea is to have high-risk pools and buying insurance across state lines, and they do believe that medical malpractice reform is kind of the way to bring costs down. There's a big debate about that.
I'm curious why you think the president didn't include more of these things from the get-go. I mean, he came into office touting his post-partisanship, and the big two that we just talked about seem kind of reasonable, at least in some way. Certainly, you know, tort reform is a legitimate issue for many doctors, especially OBGYNs, even if you don't embrace the radical tort reform the Republicans stand for. Why didn't the president go there to begin with, even if just for show, to establish that he takes serious Republican concerns seriously?
Yeah, no, I actually agree with you. I think that early on he could have, done this in a more kind of high-profile manner, not at the very end after he's almost been kind of almost defeated, to kind of take these four ideas. No, I agree with you. I think that he could have had a much more high-profile outreach to Republicans. He also could have done something else, which probably would have been politically more difficult for him. But he could have said, you know what, John McCain had a good idea in the campaign, and I'm sorry I bashed it so much, but we should get rid of the tax deduction for employer-provided health care, because that is the number one thing that not only is an incredible source of funding, something like $957 billion over 10 years, but also every single health care economist says it is the best way to make consumers better consumers of health care and to bring the cost curve down.
NPR national political correspondent Mara Liasson, my guest on WNYC. On another of those four Republican items, I want to play a clip of what I think is incredible doublespeak that the Republicans are using on Medicare and Medicaid. This is a lead Republican voice on all of this, Congressman Eric Cantor of Virginia, on Meet the Press on Sunday. And listeners, as you hear this, remember that the Republicans are pushing for doctors to be paid more now, more under Medicaid.
The problem is with the president's bill, it's about expanding Medicaid. No one wants to go on to Medicaid. That's why physicians in Florida and other states are leaving Medicaid in droves, because of the imperfect reimbursement structure. That's what this bill is about, is expanding the government programs that don't work. We need real reform to bring down costs.
David, So, Mara, to slow down and unpack that a little bit, he says, as he always does, that we need real reforms to bring down costs. But then they lobby for not cutting Medicare reimbursements and for paying doctors more under Medicaid. Is that just a case of saying anything to make the Democrats look bad?
Well, I think that is something that will probably come back to haunt Republicans. I mean, they say their number one priority is cutting costs, yet they don't want to touch a hair on Medicare's head. They don't want to, you know, in the past, the Republicans know that they've gotten into trouble, and Democrats have hurt them whenever the Republicans have suggested making Medicare cuts. So now they're trying to do the exact reverse to the Democrats and saying, you're cutting Medicare. And they've done a pretty good job of getting seniors to really sour on this health care reform effort. So I think that will come back to haunt them, because if we are going to ever get health care costs under control, something is going to have to be done about Medicare.
On the seniors, help me with a reality check here. True or false, there are no proposals in the Democrats' plan for cutting any Medicare benefits to seniors. And the Republicans always used to be the party of saying Medicare needs to be streamlined to save it from bankruptcy. True or false?
Right. No, there are no plans to cut benefits, but there are plans to make Medicare more efficient. There are all sorts of demonstration projects in this bill that are going to figure out ways to cut costs. And Medicare, the idea of the White House was that Medicare, since it's such a big driver of health care inflation and such a big portion of national health care spending, would be used as kind of the wedge to get costs down as you tried to figure out better ways of reimbursing doctors, more efficient ways. But, you know, anything that's a change can be painted as a potential cut.
Listeners, we have just a couple of minutes, a few minutes for a couple of calls from Mara Liasson. Let's keep it to health care, Jim Bunning, and Charlie Rangel for right now. 212-433-WNYC, and we'll get to Rangel. 212-433-9692, or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And Mara, it seems to me that we learned again from the healthcare summit last week just how big the basic differences between the parties really are on healthcare. And it's not new, but there it was on display. And I thought Republican strategist Mary Madeline was very honest about it on CNN when she was doing, you know, analysis from the right after the summit ended. She said Democrats think healthcare is a right. Republicans think health care is a responsibility. Would you analyze it that way?
I think that's absolutely fair. That explains the philosophical, ideological difference. Yes, I think that's very fair. The Republicans say people should be savvy consumers. Everybody should get, you know, have catastrophic health care and, yeah, be responsible more or less for themselves. And Democrats feel that everyone should have health care. And they argue that the way to cut costs is by having everybody covered. The bigger the pool you have, the more you can address costs. But, yeah, that's the gulf that couldn't be bridged, even though, you know, during the Clinton health care effort, Republicans were for an individual mandate. It kind of shows you how much farther the Republicans have moved to the right in those years.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree with her. I think that's a very good way to put it.
Which means Republicans are for kind of a social Darwinism on health care. Fewer third-party payments in general. And Newt Gingrich was honest about this when he came on this show. This is a couple of years ago now. But meaning less insurance, not more, and more out-of-pocket medical expenses for every American, not less, because they think health care economics, pardon me for saying this, are the same as television economics. If you can't afford a television, the government doesn't need to provide you one. If you can't afford health insurance, same thing. You just need to work harder, show more personal responsibility, and you'll work your way up to better health care, too. I mean, that is the GOP bottom line, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, and look, you know, one of the things that's happening in our health care system is that's the direction it's going. I mean, everybody, you know, President Obama made a big deal of saying if you like your health care, we're not going to touch a hair on its head. Well, most people's health care is devolving into catastrophic as we speak. You know, employer-provided health care is covering less, higher premiums. And I think as the employer, if this health care reform bill doesn't pass, as the employer system, I think, will slowly wither to the point where everybody is more or less in the individual market. And then I think there will be, you know, a whole new set of politics about this. But, yeah, I think that what the Republicans worry about is that Barack Obama wants to turn America into Western Europe and have a kind of social welfare system that's more like what people get in European countries. And they think, you know, they're against it philosophically, but also they think that it would hurt American competitiveness.
All right. Ramon in Larchmont says there would be ramifications for seniors, even though benefit cuts aren't on the table for Medicare per se. Yes, Ramon?
Yes, because when Medicare Advantage was created, it was created as a boondoggle to the large plans. They got 14% more money to do what Medicare was already doing in its fee-for-service system. So now to rectify that, they're going to cut that 14% over the next 4 or 5 years, and that would require basically the health plans, the for-profit health plans, to cut so they can maintain their profit. Mm.
So people who are on, and Mara, that may be a fair point, that people who are on Medicare Advantage plans, though they're being subsidized by the government, this privatization, they're getting more benefits. And if that privatization goes away, those people
yes,
get less benefits.
Yes, I guess you could make the argument that for people on Medicare Advantage, they would see some change. But then there's the whole argument about, you know, is Medicare Advantage a good way to spend taxpayer dollars to subsidize the profits of health insurance companies when you already have Medicare.
On the health care as a right versus responsibility, Melissa in Hoboken, you're on WNYC. Hi, Melissa.
Hi. Yeah, it struck me as you were discussing Mary Madeline summing up the situation that really that's the problem. I think both sides ought to recognize that health care is both a right and a responsibility, and I think the president's program is trying to frame the argument that way, but the Democrats and Republicans seem to want to, you know, move to the ends of the spectrum. Is there anybody working, you know, to sort of blend those two positions?
I think that if there had been a little bit more real reform in this bill, the president could have had a better job planting his flag right into the middle of that debate, the right and the responsibility balance. Because as this bill has progressed through the system, the reform parts of it, the parts that make consumers make patients better consumers of health care, have really been weakened. And you know, just a perfect example is what's happened to the tax on the Cadillac plans. You know, the high-end plans that are right now, if you get it from your employer, it's tax-deductible, as opposed to if you have to go out and buy insurance as an individual, you have to pay with after-tax dollars. That is a big reform idea that would have a big impact, and every step of the way it's been watered down. But, yeah, I agree with the caller. I mean, it's a right and a responsibility, and I think the president really I think one of his mistakes was letting Congress write this bill. They were interested in the goodies, not the pay-fors, you know, and that's what's happened to this bill as it's gone along.
Clinton tried that. You remember that. Clinton made a whole big show when he came into office of saying his administration was going to be about balancing rights and responsibilities. And he got hammered from the right just as Barack Obama is.
Yes, but Bill Clinton had a different project. Bill Clinton's project was to move the Democrats to the center. They hadn't won elections in a very long time. He did that. He did that in a lot of ways. Barack Obama came in, and I think the Democrats felt that he won decisively, unlike Bill Clinton. It was a real popular vote mandate, an electoral college landslide. And I think he thought he had a bigger mandate than he did. Mm. And by kind of subcontracting the writing of the health care bill to Congress, you ended up getting the best ideas inside the Democratic spectrum, not necessarily the best ideas across the entire political spectrum.
But now, Melissa, I wouldn't recommend you run for Congress because you're not polarized enough.
I know. That's why I joined the coffee party. We'll see how that little project turns out.
Thank you, Melissa. Mara Lyson, before you go, on Charles Rangel stepping down temporarily this morning as chairman of the Ways and Means Committee because of his ethics problems, we covered the local angle with a local columnist earlier in the hour. Are there any national policy implications with Rangel out as chairman of the Ways and Means Committee, or national political implications, implications that go beyond Charlie Rangel's life?
Well, I guess in terms of policy angles, it just depends on who takes over the gavel as the House Ways and Means Committee chairman and what stamp they put on legislation and whether or not they would write legislation in a different way than Rangel would have. In terms of the national political implications, I think that this obviously is bad for Democrats. Nancy Pelosi came in promising the most ethical House administration ever, and this will be thrown back in her face daily by Republicans, if not hourly. And so it's not good. And the idea is, obviously, in an election year, you want to have as few ethics scandals among your members as possible, especially when you're the embattled, endangered majority. But that's one of the reasons that Rangel had to step down, is because Democrats understand, as one of them said, that we're in a zero-tolerance environment for any kind of ethical lapse, especially with this anti-incumbent, anti-Congress, anti-Democrat sentiment running so high. And that's why he had to step down, because Democrats were starting to desert him.
NPR national political correspondent Mara Lyson, we'll hear you on the network shows. Thanks so much for coming on WNYC and doing a one-on-one with us today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Stay tuned.